Hello and welcome to the Wild Film Hub podcast. I'm your host, Karina Thomas. In today's episode, we will be speaking with the unbelievable and incomparable sound recordist, Ellie Williams. She'll be telling us a little bit about how she got into sound recording and the latest natural history series we worked on together, Earth Sounds, which is out now on Apple TV+. First, I just love to start off with a little bit about you and who you are. So can you tell us where you grew up?
So I grew up just north of Bristol, so nowhere particularly exotic. I grew up on a bog standard cul-de-sac. My family were kind of middle class, I guess, but we never really had much money. But what we did have was music, and we had nature, and my mum would always take us out to the woods because it was free.
Yeah.
And she'd always pick me up instruments from all over the place. She picked me up a drum from Oxfam that had been used as a vase in the window. She's like, oh, I bought you this. So we always had loads and loads of kind of sound, I guess, in our lives.
And I suppose that leads into my next question, which is, what got you interested in sound?
I guess for me, yeah, probably music to begin with. I used to play around with my tape recorder in my room. I played loads of different instruments and eventually started playing the bass guitar.
Oh, wow.
And I think that got me into enjoying the technical side of sound, really. Because suddenly you were using an amplifier and recording in studios and playing gigs on stage. But yeah, very much for me, it was music first, nature later.
So how did you go from a music-loving bass guitar player to figuring out that maybe you wanted to record natural history sounds?
Okay, so I played gigs a lot when I was at university.
Nice.
And then when I left, I think I was just a bit tired of doing that, and I went to the Amazon rainforest just as a voluntary placement because I just really wanted to go traveling. And I was listening to the dawn chorus. I think I just had this moment where I was just like, whoa, there's so much music in nature.
Mm.
And I began to really start picking apart the sounds in a soundscape and just really enjoying hearing all the different songs and the rhythms and just all the different kind of frequencies and layers of sound, and realising that maybe that's where my heart was being pulled. You know, not only did I have music, but I had this immersion in nature as well.
That's so true. When you're out in nature and you're listening to the natural sounds, and every different place has its own different melody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where did you go from there?
Then I came home with no money.
Yes.
And I phoned the BBC Natural History Unit. And the receptionist put me through to someone in HR. He then started emailing, he was really sweet, started emailing me jobs, but I never managed to be a real contender for any of them because I didn't have a biology background.
Mm-hmm.
But he was looking for volunteers for Wild Screen, actually, years ago.
Oh, wow.
So I went along with some other people and volunteered for the day and kind of got to know a few people that way. And I just started kind of getting to know this guy in HR a bit better. He's really sweet. He worked in radio for a long time. And I guess just started subtly networking without really being conscious of it. And then about 9 months later, I think he said, oh, we need someone for 2 weeks on this film about India.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, do you want to come in? So I came in and just had this wonderful couple of weeks working with his team. And then they were like, oh, can you stay on a month? Okay. Can you stay on 6 months? Yes, please.
Whoa.
Can you stay on a year? And that's just how it, you know, it was almost like it was this tiny little foot in the door.
That just worked for you.
Yeah.
And what was the role? Were you a technical assistant? Were you a sound assistant?
No,
were you
just a production assistant.
A production assistant.
So it was literally anything I could be just to get in, you know what it's like, just get in there and show people who you are and that you can learn quickly. And
so you got a year on the India production.
Yeah.
And then where did you go?
I basically, because I was so desperate to go on location, I would put my hand up every opportunity there was. So they sent me to Japan to work with this cameraman, just to be there as somebody to help, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to Borneo and went to Kenya, and very much in kind of a supportive role. But I always spotted what the sound recordist was up to, and I was always kind of my eye on that job because it just looked like, I mean, it was just so wonderful. It's like someone with a portable recording studio, like on a harness, listening to this perspective that no one else got.
So you got in, you got a really lucky break and got your production assistant role.
Yeah, but the real big moment for me was, well, it just felt like a, you know, a bit of a lifetime opportunity was after I'd done Big Cat Diary.
Mm.
And the producer from that, I was just in the BBC canteen getting some lunch, and he said, Ellie, I want you to work on my next series. And and that was a series about the South Pacific Islands, called South Pacific.
Oh, lovely.
And he explained that they needed someone to be based in New Zealand.
Whoa.
And they were basically, they were originally trying to find someone in New Zealand that could do the job, and then crew would come in and just stay there and do the shoots and then come mm-hmm. out and travel to all the islands. But I think they soon realised that actually it was really difficult to train someone up in all the BBC mm. systems and everything. So I said, oh, why don't you send me? Anyway, 3 months later, I was living in New Zealand for... I was out there for 15 months.
Whoa!
But the kind of life changer for me was that the house I was in, we had this room where I looked after all the camera kits and a sound kit. There was a sound kit! So there was this gorgeous Pelly case with this sound kit in it, and I did look at it one day, but I was really busy. I was setting up so many shoots.
Yeah.
But it was like I wanted to do it so much that I was too scared to have a go. Isn't that mad?
Yeah.
But it did really just make me realise how much I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And when I came back from New Zealand, I was placed on Autumn Watch. Mm-hmm. And that's when I met Gary Moore. I plucked up the courage to ask him one night about sound recording and open up my heart to say how much I was desperate to do it. And I hadn't told anyone before. And I think he could just see how much passion I had for it.
Yeah.
And he was just like, right, I'll take you under my wing. And he just did. And that is where it all started.
It's an incredible journey to get into sound recording, and shows a lot of perseverance. I know a little bit about sound from my work in production. We refer to a soundscape.
Yeah.
What type of things make up a soundscape?
Yeah, a soundscape is all the elements of sound in an environment. So you could split it into these three kind of subsections. You get the biophony,
mm-hmm.
which are biological sounds, so sounds made by animals. You get the geophony, which is non-biological sounds, so be wind in the trees or waves or the sound of a volcano.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the biggest sound of all, which is the anthropophony, sound made by humans, which could be really beautiful sounds if you think of music.
Mm-hmm.
And that I love the human voice, but there's also a lot of cacophony that we make, and that could be from industry or roads or planes, or, you know, generally just the messy sounds that we make as humans. And yeah, that all kind of jumbles together to make the sound of our planet.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what you're listening for when you're on location?
So, I mean, it all depends on what you're filming,
mm-hmm.
but really what I need to do is get all the elements of a soundscape to bring back, to build the kind of world of the sequence. So that might be vocalizations, it might be the environment that they're in. I'll be getting the ambience of the location, whether that's the dawn chorus or the sound of wind kind of rushing through grass. There may be elements that I'll be getting that are really unusual. So I might be picking up kind of macro sounds, so sounds that we as humans wouldn't be able to hear.
Earth Sound is a series for Apple and is out on Apple TV Plus, all about how animals use sound to navigate through the natural world. It is the first series I know of its kind, which really focused on sound.
Mm.
When you heard about it, what did you think, and how was your experience recording on it?
Yeah, I mean, as soon as I got a whiff of it being made, I was just so keen. Natural history is so traditionally led by the visuals mm-hmm. rather than sound.
Mm.
And yet I feel like that has missed so much. We are very vision-led, so obviously we look for stories that look amazing, but actually in the worlds of all these different characters, sound can play such a huge part.
So that's what Earth Sounds really taught me. There's so much more going on if you stop and listen.
As soon as you start to listen, you understand how complex all these lives are.
Mm.
And how we've probably overlooked a lot of that.
Yeah.
And we've missed a lot of information, and we've possibly, you know, dumbed down the natural world, thinking that we're this superior intelligent species, when actually there's so much going on that we're just completely missing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When we worked together on Earth Sounds, you were the sound recordist on my Falklands shoot. And I know that that's a really unique and strange environment. What types of things were you recording in the soundscape there?
Oh, so that shoot was a dream. And I'm gutted you didn't come.
I know.
Because you had your baby, didn't
literally,
you?
Literally, I can't. It's like my dream team assembled, dream location.
Oh, so the Falklands was a dream for so many reasons for me. Sorry, Karina. But the main one was that there wasn't really any human-made sound at all on the island.
Yeah.
I think it was called Sea Lion Island. But I was primarily there to tell the story, get the sounds to match the footage that was being shot of the elephant seals. Mm-hmm. These huge 4-ton males. It was amazing. Oh, I'm sorry.
It's fine. I've seen the footage, I've done the edit, I'm okay with it, I've made my piece.
But yeah, so the story is that there are these beach masters, these big male elephant seals, and each one has its own harem of females. Mm-hmm. But the fun thing is that a kind of rival male come out of the ocean, try and like take their place and have their females. So they have these enormous fights. So, the best moment of sound was when we had two fighting, and I had to kind of do this slightly mad kind of dodging around this fight
looks
scene
amazing.
To get the sound. And it was weird because we are so used to kind of sounds being enhanced in mm-hmm. post-production. It was kind of weird to hear the sound of them, because it was almost like two massive like raw bits of meat being whacked against each other as their teeth went into each other's
Gosh.
necks.
Which is kind of what they're doing. They do just slap against each other.
It's like blubber whacking. But on top of that, we were there. We were working with some scientists out there, weren't we? Mm-hmm. Trying to work out whether the beach masters can use sound to find out whether the rival males are kind of coming out of the water. Because elephant seals are so big, like elephants, they use seismic sound. Mm-hmm. So their vocalisations, these amazing kind of deep, they kind of go, whoa, whoa. Oh no, that's not sound like it at all.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
That'll do.
No, it's more growly. I'll see if I can play something.
Yeah, so they make they were making these huge kind of deep calls, really loud. But the calls were not only travelling through the air, they were also travelling through the beach. But also when they moved, there were all these seismic sounds that I was picking up with this amazing microphone called a geophone. Yeah, the scientists had this theory that the beachmaster could sense when a rival male was coming out of the ocean. But the thing I think was muddying it was that when the waves were really big, they were a similar frequency. Mm. So I imagine that's probably why some of them snuck up on some days, and other days they just couldn't get anywhere near.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, but I mean, that's the whole thing about sound, is that we've got to be very careful not to judge animals through our own senses.
It's something that I really learned on Earth Sound, is our perception of the world, what we can hear, isn't the only thing that's happening. Mm. And it's really hard for us to understand things that are outside of our perception, so sounds lower and higher than we can hear. Yeah. And even really hard for us to record or think of them affecting the natural world.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, talking of sound in nature, I know you've recorded loads of different things. What are some of the weirdest sounds that you've been asked to record, and how did you go about capturing them?
I had this amazing moment on Earth Sounds again, where we'd been filming howler monkeys, and the cinematographer Sue Gibson had been filming up a platform for a few weeks. And I was like, well, you know, I'm getting great sound just under the trees mm-hmm. at the normal level of the rainforest. But actually, I want my sound to kind of mirror the perspective of what Sue was getting. Mm-hmm. So the rope access guy, Ollie, he produced this swing for me. And about five people kind of tugged me up to the top of this fig tree.
Amazing.
And I recorded the dust chorus from, oh God, I don't know, maybe 25 metres up a fig tree.
Why?
That was amazing.
Did it sound markably different
absolutely.
Than it does on the floor?
Yeah, absolutely. Because once you get up into the canopy, there aren't so many obstacles for the sound wave. So you mm-hmm. hear things from much further away.
Wow.
So you get a very different experience up there.
and that's what the howlers would hear.
They
But one of the things, I mean, it's so unexpected. One of the, my favourite things is when we were in Plymouth in the marine biology laboratory and we were recording scallops.
Yeah.
And this scallop was, we were just filming it in a tank, and as it lifted off and kind of, I don't know, what would you call it?
Clasped its way
while it's swimming. It made musical notes.
Yeah, it did.
And I was just like, what?
They were beautiful.
I know.
Boop, 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 boop.
Yeah. I was like, wow. I didn't expect. So it's, yeah, there's always these unexpected moments that kind of create this real beauty to something that, you know, might feel two-dimensional until you introduce sound, and then it's like, whoa, let's, you know, what is going on there?
And it's such an incredible area because there's so many things that have never been recorded before, so you don't know what to expect. We can't often hear these sounds. So like the swimming scallop, we didn't know that it was going to make a note, and we didn't hear it on outside the tank. We only heard it from dipping in a hydrophone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think the thing that's really made me excited over the past few years is collaborating with scientists. I'll bring them back sounds that they've never heard before, and they've, you know, been studying something for decades and they're just blown away. Sound can really open up worlds that we are unaware of.
Do you ever use Foley in the field, and can you explain a little bit about what Foley is and how that's used in natural history?
Yeah, so Foley is recreating sounds in post-production. My favourite example is if you imagine a polar bear walking through snow, you have to kind of imagine again a Foley artist with a rubber marigold washing up glove filled with flour, just kind of gently manipulating it to make that crunching sound. So there's all kinds of tricks to do that. But yeah, for me, the more sound I can get on location, the more scope that gives the sound designer to authentically create the world that we filmed in. Because shockingly and traditionally, natural history shoots will come back with mute rushes.
Gosh.
And that's happened for years and years and years. But then the, you know, the post team will have a really tough time because they have to create a world without ever hearing what it was like. If I can bring everything that's needed back, then all the post team need to do is add, you know, little bits and bobs. They might add a little bit of Foley that I couldn't get. They'll add music, they'll add narration, maybe a little bit of archive sound. But the bulk of the soundscape will be true.
And having the soundscape, so the sound world of where you've really been filming, so that beach on that day, the sound of the waves, the sound of the wind, the sound of the colonies, there is something really unique that perfectly matches the visuals when it has been captured. And when it hasn't, it loses a certain level, layer.
But that's why Earth Sounds was so brilliant, because it really did capture sound for every story. And I think it was pretty pioneering in that way, actually.
In my experience, most of the sound recordists I've worked with or heard of in natural history have been men. Has that been your experience, and what challenges have you come up against in the field?
I think it's quite fascinating. I think there's something crazy like, I think it's only 5% of location recordists, sound recordists, are women.
Wow.
That's such a small percentage, isn't it?
It's
really bizarre. Yeah, when I started out, I guess I was conscious that it was a male-dominated role. I didn't know of any females doing it. But I think because I was a bass player in a band before, I was kind of used to being in a male role, and I guess I didn't mind people going, oh, that's quite unusual. But I guess I did worry that people would judge me for being a woman going into a technical role. I don't know, it never seemed to be a problem as far as I'm aware. Work started rolling in quite quickly after I went freelance.
That's so good.
But maybe that was because I'd already been in the natural history unit for years.
So I found this really good article, which was from Women in TV and Film, and it's by dubbing mixer and sound designer Emma Butt. And she looked at gender and race equality across the field of sound, and it was specifically for factual TV.
Emma looked at the 36 top-rated shows across six broadcasters, so it's BBC, 1 and 2, ITV, Channel 4, Channel 5 and Sky. She looked through the credits and saw that there were 60 sound roles and they were undertaken by a total of 55 people. Out of those, only six people were female. Just one man identified as mixed race, everyone else was white.
That's shocking, isn't it?
And so, and I mean, this is 2019, so it's not today, but given the length of time it takes to achieve a role as a sound recordist, I can't imagine it's something that will change very quickly.
In terms of, like, I don't know any other, like, niche wildlife sound recordists who are female. I know of other sound recordists, but specific for the natural history, I just don't really know anyone other than me.
No.
It's, yeah.
Why do you think there is such inequality in sound?
I think it's seen as a very technical role, and I think traditionally technical roles are associated with men. Girls haven't been encouraged to do STEM subjects. Mm-hmm. That's changing. So maybe, you know, maybe there is this kind of ripple effect that will happen. But yeah, it's seen as a very blokey thing, and it's strange because when you do the role, it doesn't really feel like a very kind of masculine role. Yeah, yes, there's technology, but there's a lot of creativity and art. It's kind of a really beautiful mix of science and art. One of the things I worried about when I went freelance was that I had a baby, and I don't know whether people thought this or whether I thought they'd think this, but I just thought they'd see me as someone that had a more complicated life, and I'd be less flexible. I probably hid the fact that I was a mother now and again.
I did that. Until I started doing this podcast, I just didn't really mention that I've had a child. Like, I don't hide it. Like, at my current work, people know I've got a daughter, but I really make an effort not to speak about her at work and not to talk about it to the wider TV community. You know, and most people don't know, so they didn't ask. And I just didn't want subconsciously people thinking, oh, Karina's had a baby, so she probably wouldn't want to do this job or that job, you know. And now she's a bit older, I'm not so sensitive about it because now I've just got a child.
Yeah.
But I was definitely very sensitive about it.
When I first started out, if I had a phone call about a job, like someone would say, can you go to Brazil for 2 weeks, these are the dates, I'd be like, I'm just going to check my availability. And actually what I was really doing was trying to work out if I could get childcare. And then I kind of call back and go, that's fine, my I shifted things around, it's fine. But you do feel like you can't. I mean, now I've been doing it a lot longer, I'm much more honest.
Yeah, I think being a parent is a real challenge, and especially perceptions of mums and women in TV, especially on location, can be quite challenging. So we'll see. Hopefully that will change in the coming few years. So I just wanted to touch upon sound design. And you work quite closely with Wounded Buffalo, which is a sound studio here in Bristol. Can you tell us a little bit about why that relationship is so important?
Sure. Yeah, so historically, location sound has been quite detached and separate from post sound. I think probably because when shoots happen, the post house isn't on board yet. But for me, collaboration is the key to making a really, really amazingly powerful, immersive soundscape. And it's an absolute treat, both for me and the people at Wounded Buffalo, if we can talk right from the beginning. I can come up with ideas of what I think I can get on location. They can, you know, decide whether that's what they want. You know, we've even tested microphones out before we've gone for niche shoots, so they can say, well, that's the sound I want. So I go on location and it's amazing because I know I have this confidence that I'm getting exactly what they want. And then it's like a treat for them because they're delivered all these sounds, all the sounds that they need, rather than, you know, quite often they'll work on a series and they'll just get given the sound recordings and they just have to make the most of what they get. And sometimes they're just not what they need, they're not up to scratch. So, we're just making some really beautiful series together because we can collaborate.
And then my last question is, how do you think that thoughtful sound design elevates a natural history programme?
The better the sound, the more immersive.
mm. as sequences. Mm. The more you're drawn into the world of the story, the more authentic it is.
Mm.
So, yeah, sound is the thing that really plays with your emotions. It's the thing that tricks your brain into kind of feeling that you're actually there. Mm. So if sound is done well, you shouldn't be conscious of it. You should just feel kind of emotionally transported into the story that you're watching, and that's why it's just so beautiful and magical, really.
Yeah, it's so true. It's like when sound design is done beautifully, you're so immersed in the visuals, in the feelings, in the music, in the emotion, mm. that you don't notice it at all. It's just a real beautiful...
Yeah, you're absolutely transported.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a very kind of sensory experience.
Well... That was all my questions. Thank you so much. It's been really interesting to hear about your journey and the world of sound. Was there anything you wanted to add?
Well, so what has Earth Sounds done for your kind of appreciation of sound?
I think it has done a couple of things. I'm in awe at how little focus has been in making sure we record sounds on location,
mm.
because every place sounds different, and it sounds different at a different time of day, mm. and a different season. But also I think that as you get to know a certain colony or individual animal, you can really hear their voice,
mm.
and you can really tell a lot more about their personality, their mm. character even.
And the complexity of their kind of communication.
Exactly, their intelligence. And I think the biggest thing for me, the most illuminating thing, was hearing sounds that we can't usually hear.
Mm.
So to hear sounds that no one's ever heard before, no one's ever been able to record before, and think about how animals are using that to communicate, look at it with the visuals that were recorded at the same time and see the reactions.
Mm.
It's incredible that there's this world of sound that animals are using that we've never been able to see before or hear before, perceive before, and how it affects their behaviour. It's really made me try and reconsider whatever my perspective is when I might be filming wildlife. It might not be the same as theirs.
Absolutely not. And we need to get into their world by trying to understand their senses, really, and understand what they're picking up and what it sounds like.
Yeah. Well, that was all my questions. Thank you so much. It's been really interesting to hear about your journey and the world of sound. For What to Watch, Earth Sounds, created by Offspring Films, is now out on Apple TV Plus, and Mammals, produced by the Natural History Unit, is now available on BBC iPlayer.